Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 171st time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have a little bit of news, and I've watched and read a few things, and then we'll get to today's topic. So let's get started. Due to the lack of news segment last week, we kind of missed the mark on this one a tiny bit, but we can announce that Comey Witch Lara has begun. So we had only previously known that it would start in October, but we got the specific date of October 14th, which means season 2 has already begun. And we've seen a lot of really lovely promo and the new opening and so on online. So you should definitely go check that out on the official YouTube page for Comey Witch Lara and see, all the new things that are in store. Next, Magical Girl Raising Project announced a new series, Magical Girl Raising Project Red, or AKA. This was originally teased during one of the live reading shows that had happened recently. So, it's really exciting. It comes out November 27th in Japanese. So it's likely that it will get a translation into English, considering the popularity of the franchise and the past translation availability. So look out for further news on that. In the world of distribution, we got the announcement from Discotech Media that they have gotten the license for season 1 of Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha. So if you were interested in getting a hold of that series, you can now get a Blu-ray coming soon from them. So look out for that in the future. So next, let's move on to what I've been watching and reading. So first, of course, Soaring Sky Precure, as always. Episodes 35 and 36 were both very delightful, very much tearjerker episodes. I definitely cried at both, and they were both really great character-focused episodes as well, so that was really exciting. So I had a really great time there. And of course, we cannot miss Otona Precure as well. So episodes 1 and 2 aired since our last segment, and it really had quite the impact. It's been very interesting to see the difference in reaction between Japanese viewers and English-speaking viewers on the internet, but I enjoyed both episodes. I feel like, based on the voice actor interviews, that I am particularly excited to see where things are going in a positive direction, because right now things are very much in a low point at the start. And of course, we did get our first transformation, and there were a lot of reactions to that. I think that it'll be interesting to see, how this goes and like the kind of message they intend to bring with this. Because I think what's going on is a lot of people are kind of in a first impression getting a message that they don't like, but I don't think we've gotten the message quite yet, so we have to wait and see. But yeah, and next, just in the world of continuing airing shows, we have Shy. So episode 3 did come out, so I haven't watched it yet, but episodes 1 and 2 were really good. I didn't know what to expect of the show because I hadn't read the comic books, of course. And yeah, I was just pleasantly surprised. I am glad that I have mark this as a magical girl series, because it definitely has that element to it, especially in episode 2. And it was just, really, really exciting. It's one of those series that I think I really hope will get continuations, because there are 21 volumes of this comic, so there is a lot of source material. So we'll see what happens. But so far, so good. And then Dekoboku Majo no Oyakujijo. So this series is still interesting. Of course, there's still a lot of like adult jokes and stuff, but I have really enjoyed episodes 2 and 3, despite the glaring issues with some of the jokes and the way the comedy goes. I still find the characters to be all incredibly endearing, so I'm still really enjoying myself watching the show. And then finally, in the world of comics, so as I mentioned, I believe last new segment, we have a new series, Magical Girl Tsubame, which came out both on Jump Plus in Japan and simulpubbed on Manga Plus. So if you are over in a country that has access to that website, you can go read for free officially in English the simulpub of actually chapters 1 and 2, though I have only read chapter 1 at this point as of recording. So I will continue reading it, of course, but it's very different, not just because of the art style and all that, but the world and the kind of system that we're looking at is quite peculiar. And we have a girl who really wants to be a magical girl, and she becomes one to protect another magical girl. So yeah, it's raising a lot of questions right out the gate, and I can't wait to find out what those answers are. But yeah, I believe that is everything I have finished watching. So let's move on to today's topic. So today we are getting into an exciting topic, the first season of Magia Record, aka Magireko, the Madomagi or Madoka Magica side story. This is a smartphone game turned TV series, and for that reason, it's got a lot of interesting things going for it as an adaptation. It's a series that I think can be a little confusing to watch, but made for a very interesting conversation. For the record, of course, we are talking about Magireko, but because this is a Madomagi side story, we do talk about spoilers for that series as well. So if you haven't watched Madoka Magica, you should probably skip this episode until you watch it, which, you know, you should. It's only 12 episodes, right? So what's the harm? but yeah, to have this wonderful chat, I brought back on a returning guest, a lovely guest, Erin Cerise. You know her from Maho Profile and her past episodes on older shows, Melmo and Mako-chan. So this was, of course, a little bit of a different chat, but we had a really great time, and I hope you enjoy our chat too. So please be warned, both in the content of the show as well as in our conversation, we talk about suicidal ideation and death and trauma, as is per usual for this show. So please keep that in mind as you get into today's episode. But that is all I have to say, so please sit back and relax and enjoy this chat with Erin Cerise about Magia Record Season 1. Are here today to talk about the first season of Magia Record, the Puella Magai Madoka Magica side story from 2020, based on the mobile game of the same name. And I'm very delighted to have on a returning guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi there, it's returning favorite, Erin Cerise. I know, it's a shock. I'm not here to talk about something that came out before 1980.
yes, of course, you always, you know, you're consuming the more recent Magical Girl series, but you know, the people who are, you know, well versed in the classics are few and far between, but I was definitely happy to have you on for this more recent series.
yeah,
this is, I think, one of the only series that was still airing when the podcast actually got started, so that was pretty exciting.
Yes, I think I remember you talking about news about it coming out.
Yeah, especially once like everything was going on with the second and third season, which got a little messy in terms of production. But yeah,
I wonder what was happening around that time that could have caused that.
yeah, I mean, that was more like later on, because 2021 2022 I think there were more like normal animation issues going on there to delay things. But in any case, yeah, so this is a side project related to the world of Madoka Magica, but also is just more or less featuring mostly new characters. The game, when it first came out, was super exciting because it was about like getting to just meet a whole bunch of new magical girls, which, you know, we, I think, all love to see. And we'll definitely get into that as well. But before we do, Aaron, what have you been enjoying in the genre in general since your last time on the podcast?
Unfortunately, not a ton. I've been working a lot recently, so I haven't had a ton of time between work and I've been playing a lot of Pokemon for the last several months.
Very fair, very fair.
I would say Soaring Sky Precure, but I'm actually pretty behind on that right now, so I need to catch up.
Oh, may I ask about you are in the story then?
Still pre-Burb Boy.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yeah, it's quite a lot has happened since then. Well, it'll be waiting for you when you're ready to catch up.
Definitely, I want to soon.
Mm. Well, that's, you know, okay. Sometimes we are all busy, especially us adults, so...
Probably the most accurate answer to that question is the Magia Wrecker mobile game, which I have just reinstalled recently.
Awesome. Yeah. So when you reinstalled it, were you able to get like your old save file back to play on that?
No, because I played on the North American server previously, and it doesn't carry over to the Japanese server, right, which is the only one available now.
Yeah, yeah. That was a whole big thing, wasn't it? You know, it's interesting that the game did at least get popular enough to have a North American release at all, and then even had an original Magical Girl for that, which then, poor thing, did kind of get lost in the ether of the internet for a while before finally getting brought back to the Japanese side of things. But
Yeah, I was glad to see that she was available in the roster.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, for anyone who has not gotten to check out the game yet, the kind of beginning does follow roughly the same concept as we see in the series, which we'll get into plot-wise. But basically, the main story takes place, I think, most of the time in Kamihama City, which is also the setting for the show. It's this mysterious place that also, you know, has the same magical girls that we understand from the original series in terms of, like, the rules and everything. Right, anyone can make a contract to make a wish, and in so doing gets to become a magical girl and fight witches. But one of the things that is kind of unique about this place is that instead of the rule known from the original series of when your soul gem gets all like dirtied up from grief and fighting, etc., rather than just becoming a grief seed and you becoming a witch, which is the expected turn of events in this place, different things happen. Yes. But yeah, so I guess, yeah, Aaron, what is your history with the Magia Record franchise and even just like Madoka in general?
Well, it definitely goes back to around the beginning of Madoka Magica itself, which I saw not long after it finished airing, sometime in 2011 or 2012. I had rewatched the series a couple of times over the years. I've watched each of the Madoka movies once each or so. And it's always been either a fondly thought of series or later on one of my favorite series. And as far as Magia Record specifically, I started playing the mobile game again once the North American server launched, which was in June 2019. And after playing it for a while, I started making some videos about it on my YouTube channel because I was still making videos about a different mobile game, Love Live! School Idol Festival at the time. So I was just generally a gacha YouTuber, so it seemed like the thing to do. Not long after that, I ended up joining another podcast called Madoka Magicast in August 2019 as their Magi Reco correspondent. They started out as a Madoka Magica rewatch podcast where the main host had seen the series and was watching it alongside two people who hadn't seen it yet.
Right, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then they expanded out into other Madoka media after that. So anyway, we did a couple episodes about the mobile game, and then once the anime started at the start of 2020, we watched it weekly as it came out and podcasted about the first three episodes of that, and I continued to watch it after that. Unfortunately, the podcast became defunct over time due to scheduling issues, as sometimes happens with podcasts. But I did continue to watch the anime as it came out. I ended up having a bit of a falling out with the mobile game.
Oh, okay.
After a while, because I ended up spending way too much to pull Ultimate Madoka when she came out.
Yes, okay.
That was kind of a come to Ultimate Madoka moment. Mm-hmm. Like, oh no.
That's very fair, yes. So the star of like the series is in the game is like definitely not the main characters, the cast of Madoka, but they do show up throughout the game, and you can get their cards and so on and play with them because there's a battle mm-hmm. element of the game.
Yes.
Well, like pretty much any, honestly, not just the gacha game system that is prevalent in a lot of Japanese games, but really a lot of mobile games in general have this way to really get you to spend a lot more money than you might actually be able mm-hmm. to. So I totally understand that. I myself also, I can't remember when I started to play the game. I want to say it was roughly when it first started. I was kind of curious about it. And also just the fact that, again, it's a game with lots of magical girls in it. Like, where could you possibly go wrong, seemingly?
Hmm.
And so,
yeah.
I mean, we'll get into that too, but I think the main thing is like when you get the card, you can watch all the transformation sequences. And so you just got like all this extra footage.
Yeah.
And it was so fun, you know, for that reason. I'm really bad at playing games that have stories and battles and so on. So I was a little like, even with like the auto function and stuff, I was still like not really good at following along. So at some point I realized that I just kind of stopped playing the game altogether and just removed it from my phone at that time.
Fair enough.
It's still going, of course.
Mm-hmm. They just had their 6th anniversary event. And I was like, has it been that long already?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty impressive. And it's interesting because it is still like thriving here in Japan, even though the North American server ended up shutting down. But the TV series, I'm not so sure it had as big an impact as they were hoping. And of course, as of this recording, we have just found out, finally, we got more information about the next Madoka movie that will come out in winter of 2024, which is very exciting. Yes,
just now.
Yeah. Yeah. The world in general is really fascinating. So I don't know if it seems like maybe in terms of at least the animation side of things, that Magia Record will not be continuing. At least there's no reason to think about that at this moment. You know.
Yeah, like there's more story in the game that they could do, but I think they covered the most important stuff to animate based on what I know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, this one of the things that I really appreciate about the game is, again, there are so many magical girls, so there are just so many stories that they've done. Maybe not all of them are like necessarily appropriate, but you know, there are still some interesting ones. And I was like, wow, I would love to see this little side character or whatever, like get their own, you know, animated series. So, you know, for that reason, it's a little disappointing. There's certainly a lot of potential in the game, but I understand that they're not the main cast and they're not the magical quintet, you know, so.
The main story already has so much you need to cover. There's not really much room to include all of the other side stories to the side story.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, it's too bad. But yeah, so let's get into the main story. So the central character of Magia Record is Iroha Tamaki. And she's a magical girl who's in an undisclosed town, but she ends up moving quite quickly elsewhere, so it's fine. She's a magical girl who doesn't remember what she wished for, which seems like a pretty big deal. And she ends up meeting another magical girl in town, and they're running up a local witch. And they talk about this rumor that magical girls can be saved, can be rescued from something, if they go to the city of Kamihama. And so one character that Iroha keeps seeing every time they encounter these, like, witches is what looks to be like a Kyubei, the character, that the kind of mascot character that we know from the original series, but a lot smaller and cuter and doesn't really speak. And
smaller, cuter, more merchandisable.
Perhaps. And they do end up going to Kamihama, and it is through this and also meeting the magical girl Yachio Nanami that she realizes that she had a younger sister that she has somehow forgotten, and she remembers that her wish had been to cure her. So she has to kind of explore the town of Kamihama, the city of Kamihama, rather, to kind of figure out what's going on here. Like, why are the witches stronger? What is special about this place? Why do so many magical girls come here with this notion of being savable? And what on earth happened to her sister? So it's, yeah, pretty interesting kind of world. We get like this main cast of characters. Yachio is really not excited about anyone coming from out of town to get involved. Mm-hmm. It's a natural notion to be like, this is our territory, this is our region, you know, our jurisdiction, I guess. So you don't have to come over here and try to fight our witches. Also, Iroha is clearly not as strong as the other magical girls in town. Like, she always needs help when fighting the witches, which isn't necessarily a sign that she's like bad at being a magical girl, but just like there's just a different caliber to both the magical girls and the witches in this place. Yeah, and then she meets some other girls. So there's Momoko, Kaede, and Rena. The first kind of little arc is them dealing with the way the witches kind of work is they keep looking for rumors. And the rumors end up like leading to a witch that they have to defeat. But there's always this kind of like deeper, not exactly a slice of life sort of thing, but like it always relates to like real life situations that they're also going through.
Yeah.
So the first one involves the friendship of Kaede and Rena, who of course they're very different. Kaede is like very shy and cute. Rena's a little bit more forward and very brash.
Yeah.
But they are friends. And so when they're having this falling out, they deal with the rumor of the friendship ending stairway, which is an interesting one. And they have to rescue Kaede from that. So that's in episodes 2 and 3.
Yeah, 2 and 3.
Basically. Meanwhile, Iroha is still trying to find any hints or anything about her sister. She has memories of the hospital that Ui was in, and she tries to find records of her. There's no record of her at that hospital, but there are records of the friends that she had there. So she knows there's at least some sort of grain of truth to whatever's going on.
Yeah, something in these dream visions is accurate.
Yeah. I love there's like all these little things, and you know, these are also in the game as well, but like the magical girls kind of have like this major hideout in the city and like this kind of like group therapist in the
this like warehouse where this magical girl chiropractor lives,
basically. There's a lot of like caring for the magical girls going on, but we also know that like there's other things afoot. Like, for one thing, the ending theme song of this show is just basically a music video of Yachio being very emo. And she's one of the few adult magical girls in the series, which is interesting.
Yes, they make a big deal about how she's in college and has survived so long.
Yes. And she's like a professional and everything. So she definitely ends up kind of slowly becoming everyone's mom in a way, despite her best efforts to not make friends.
she attracts magical girls like cats.
She really does. But there's all these like different things, so you know, it's easy for the magical girls to contact each other. And we see like it's episode 3, we also see Mami Tomoe from the original series.
Yes, and then you're like, oh well, where does this fit into the original then?
Exactly. And she is there because Kyubei apparently cannot enter Kamihama, which is very strange. So she is trying to investigate.
Yeah, that's one of the other major differences compared to how the original works, is that there are no Kyubeis in town except for this little one.
Yes. The small Kyubei. And everyone's like, there's no such thing as a small Kyubei. What are you talking about? But, you know, every single time that they're dealing with one of these witches, like the small Kyubei shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Iroha is trying to, you know, continue to, like, figure out what's going on with Ui's disappearance. She gets to meet another magical girl named Tsuruno, who runs a ramen shop, or works at a ramen shop, where magical girls get to eat for free, which is awesome. Again, this town is
which
wild.
I enjoy so much, this ramen shop. They just so proudly make, like, the most steadily mediocre ramen in the city.
Yes. Which is, you know, there's something kind of interesting about that, where it's like, yeah, we're not the best, and that's fine, you know.
We're the most consistently 50 out of 100 ramen you'll have.
Yeah, yeah. It was so funny because, like, Tsuruno, like, immediately after literally one bite, like, Iroha hasn't even eaten all the different parts of the ramen yet. And she's like, how does it taste? And Iroha's like, well, I guess it's a 50 out of 100. And, like, first Tsuruno is like, acts like she's been, like, shot dead. But then she's like, that's great. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's just all wild. Yeah, but then they investigate, and Tsuruno actually contacts Yachio herself, who doesn't realize that, like, she's helping Iroha. She's like, oh, you again? Okay, I guess. And they go to investigate this rumor of a shrine where you can, you know, if you wish to meet someone that you've lost, you can go there to find them.
Very convenient.
Yes, yes. So they go, like, through a whole bunch of shrines trying to find out which it is. But then after defeating a witch in a supermarket, they end up realizing which shrine it is after all, because it appears at night. So it just wasn't, you know, the right time to go. Mm-hmm. So they know they're in the right place when they see, again, small Hubei. And when they arrive, Iroha and Yachio kind of are standing on, like, different bridges, and they each see someone that they'd like to meet. So in Iroha's case, she sees her sister Ui. And in Yachio's case, she sees a girl that she identifies as Mifuyu. So things are all super mysterious here.
Yes, and we don't know who Mifuyu is at this point, or in what way that she was lost.
Right, right. So in episode 5, what we get first is just Iroha trying to talk to Ui, quickly realizing she's a fake because she can't stop just repeating the same thing like an NPC.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the witch tried to call Ui forth, but it works kind of like a video game where it's trying to call data where none exists.
Hmm. That's a really good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah.
It was malfunctioning, basically, because mm-hmm. there's not enough information in Iroha's mind of Ui. And we kind of see how things usually go on Yachio's side, where she's talking to this Mifuyu who's trying to convince her that she is the real Mifuyu by recalling things that they know about each other and all these things. And it's very clear, you know, she's been, like, looking for this girl for a long time. So it seems like finally she's there. But of course, we just saw what was going on with Ui. So, you know, Iroha's rushing to stop everything. And it turns out, yeah, she is a fake as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yachio finally realizes it and literally stabs this fake friend in the back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very poetic. yes. And so they do defeat this witch, but yeah, we see that both Yachio and Iroha end up seeming to fall to grief. Basically, this was, like, traumatic for both of them.
Yeah. It's very clear. Like, after the fake Mifuyu, Yachio is having a time, and Iroha yes. recognizes this and uses the one grief seed they have on them to clear her soul gem. Meanwhile, her own soul gem was already darkened after the witch fight they had earlier, and she's not doing much better after the being shaken by the fake Ui.
Yes, yes. But those of us who have watched this franchise before feel like maybe we would know what's going to happen next. Like, it seems like, okay, well, Iroha's going to become a witch because that's what we know to be the standard at this point. But... Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she's going to, but...
Yeah, this witch thing comes out of, like, her head, which is covered in a mask, and she kind of floats away. Like, she's, like, kind of, like, hanging like a rag doll as this thing just finishes off the shrine
yeah,
monster.
Yeah, it's kind of like big Berserk Eva Unit 1 vibes.
I'm going to pretend I understand that reference.
Oh, sorry.
No, no, it's okay. It's okay.
People who
I'm
know
sure
will
many
know.
Listeners will know, but I just never got around to finishing Ava, so. yeah. But anyway, it definitely looks like a witch, but it's not quite a witch. And this is when a mommy appears and starts to just shoot out this creature. And that leaves Iroha's body back to normal. And, you know, mommy has a whole interaction with Tsuruno and Yachio because, like, well, Iroha's out. She's mm-hmm. passed out, exhausted, I guess. But yeah, it's very interesting. Also, mommy tells Tsuruno not to trust Yachio. And it's like, what do you know about this? What's going on? But in any case, it's very clear that, yeah, her soul gem is all better for some reason. It's just back to normal. Mm-hmm. And Iroha ends up having to stay at Yachio's house. She, like, wakes up and it's already nighttime. And she's like, there's no train back home. Just stay here. And, you know, she takes care of her.
Yeah. Also worth noting that Iroha doesn't have to worry about going back home to her parents because her parents are on some business trip / vacation for a long time right now.
Yes, yes, it's true. What we see of where Iroha lives is very interesting. Like, I mean, in general, the visuals of this whole franchise are this way, right? There's like kind of futuristic places and everything. And like her school is so
Yeah, kind of like the original Madoka where it's like a slightly near future world.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty hard to believe that it's like a real place or whatever, and she doesn't have to worry about like her parents worrying about her or anything like that at the moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and we do see also at the end of this episode after the credits that the same thing does happen to Kaede, where she seems to like become a monster, but then like come back to normal and doesn't really understand what happened, but she feels like monstrous herself for that having happened to her. So there's that.
Yeah, this really cool sequence where, like, after having become a monster, her, like, witch-like form is sort of paint-like and full of colors. And when she comes out of it, the shot is all in black and white, and she has these colored paint blobs all over her hands.
Yes, yes. They definitely do continue to provide the incredible aesthetics as the original series did in this series as well. But yeah, so we go into episode 6, and when Iroha like wakes up the next day, you know, Yachio's there with breakfast, everything seems fine. She has no idea what happened, but she like says, oh, hey, Yachio, thanks so much for clearing up my soul gem. I can't believe that that worked out. You know, it's like she clearly has no idea what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, we do see a bunch of other magical girls, but really only get to meet one other, who is Felicia Mitsuki, who is a self-proclaimed magical girl mercenary. So basically, she will help out other magical girls, but you have to, you know, give her something afterwards, either it's like money or food or something. She's definitely very similar to another magical girl we already know who also appears in this episode, Kyoko Sakura. So she has also come to Kamihama, she says, to hunt witches. But yeah, this one we get the case of the lucky owl water.
Yes.
Yes. So basically you drink this water and it gives you good luck, but after 24 hours, or no, after 24...
After 24 lucky things happen.
Yes, which is an interesting thing. How do we count that? But okay. really after that, something bad will really, like, really bad will happen. So you have to be careful. This is also a rumor. So they have to investigate that and end up meeting this group called the Wings of the Magius. And they tell Felicia that... if she works for them, they are going to just get rid of all witches. So there will no longer be any witches if all goes well.
And this is of particular interest to Felicia, it seems.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because her thing is like she became a magical girl specifically. And we see this in the next episode that like it looks like her mother was killed by a witch.
Yeah, both parents.
Oh, both parents. Yeah. And so she just like dedicates, she becomes a magical girl to kill witches specifically.
Yeah, we see her like in the middle of the flames and her parents are both dead. And then Kyubei appears and is like, so what do you want to do? And her wish is kill witches.
Yep. She's a very interesting character. I mean, you gotta love a girl with a giant hammer, right? Yeah. She's a little bit of a gremlin and a little chaotic.
But we love her for that.
Yes. So yeah, the two kind of main characters of the Wings of the Magius that we see at first are these two sisters, Tsukuyo and Tsukasa Amane. They call themselves the White Feathers of the Wings of the Magius.
Mm-hmm.
And it's implied that Kyoko is also in this group, but it's not clear.
Yeah, it seems like Kyoko and Felicia are on the verge of joining and they're trying to like seal the deal.
Yeah, so Iroha ends up finding them and coming up against the sisters, and they notice that these girls have the ability to control witches, it seems, which is like pretty wild.
Dun,
It's,
dun, dun.
yeah. But yeah, they have to also still deal with this owl water thing. And yeah, the Amane sisters, they summon these witches, and this is like where we first kind of see the like controlled use of what we will come to know as the Doppels, which are these like witch counterparts of the magical girl that, if controlled, can be used effectively to continue your battle.
Yeah, to clarify the Magius, they use their Doppels, but they do also control like actual witches as well, thanks to things we'll get into.
Yes. But yeah, and in this case, Iroha ends up once again having to use her own Doppel, and they also find out that the real Mifuyu, who has been, gone this whole time, is also a member of the Wings of the Magius. So it's all, a lot of mysteries coming out here. But yeah, so Mifuyu and the Amane sisters leave, and Iroha tells Felicia, like, hey, you're like literally homeless. Stay with us. And yeah, we're just going to all be this one big happy family together now.
Yeah, and conveniently, since Iroha's parents are still going to be away for such a long time, they set up a boarding house for her, and lo and behold, it's Yachio's boarding house.
Yes. So people are, slowly coming together as a little magical girl family here. It's quite cute.
Yeah.
And Iroha transfers to Kamihama Middle School, and I mean, we don't really see a lot of school time, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, but we never really did in the original either. That's par for the course.
But we do get a new rumor in episode 8 about an invisible girl and this concept of endless solitude. They are looking into these rumors that seem to be possibly connected, maybe not. And there's also this voice that keeps showing up on people's phones, including on Iroha's. And also, Iroha keeps getting these like spam messages.
From someone who demands that she answer.
Yes. She finally puts together that like the spam texts that are asking her, "Aren't you a magical girl?" like are actually connected to what else is going on. And so they end up connecting to this thing that actually is an AI that doesn't have a physical form. So that's why, has to connect to people through the internet and phones. But we learn the story of another magical girl named Sara Futaba, who wished to be invisible. That was her magical girl wish, because she, well, was not in a great family, let's say.
Yeah, to say the least.
So magical girls do have the ability to see her, but everyone else cannot. And she ended up kind of basically running away to this endless solitude, which was this AI, and decided to kind of spend the rest of her life in there.
Yeah, like the rumor I think was intended to like trap people within it, and it was very unexpected that there was someone who wanted to stay there.
Yes. Iroha is asked by the AI to rescue Sana.
Yeah, because the AI and Sana at this point have kind of bonded, and the AI has enough sentience to recognize this isn't good for Sana. Someone needs to come and rescue her.
Yes, the poor thing. It's such a sad. I love Sana. Like the poor th she's another one that's just like, I feel so sorry for her. I want to adopt her as my own because, well, her family abandoned her basically.
Yeah, she's a precious bean.
Yeah, this whole story just tragic with her. But and she's also like confused that like this magical girl has shown up to rescue her, and like feels like she's being abandoned by the AI, by Ai-chan. So it's just it's all a lot. Another girl from the Wings of Magius, Alina Gray, in this episode, she tries to interfere with everything. She's an interesting character. She's really aggressive.
Yeah, I find her interesting, but she's definitely the least sympathetic character in the series.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that there's a lot about the show, about, well, the world of Magia Record, because it gets to explore so many options for what a magical girl can be. We get to see, like, a lot of possibilities, I feel like. So it's fun.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think I find her interesting more because I've read her side story in the game, not necessarily because of anything we see in the anime.
Very fair, yes. yeah, because with every character, once you like level them up, etc., you get to get their full story, and it's fun. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But anyways.
Yes. So yeah, Iroha rescued Sana from the endless solitude, as per the AI's wishes, and we meet Alina Gray, who uses her doppel to attack them.
Yeah, we also get a very sad moment of I asking Sana to kill her because she knows that Alina will take her over if she doesn't.
Yes. So it's just like really a very intense episode all around. But yeah, so you know, they end up meeting up with the rest of the group. In episode 10, they're able to rescue Iroha and Sana using a magnet. So Lena tries to send a witch after them, but Mami fights them back. And it turns out that, like, Mami has now also joined the Wings of the Magia, so that's interesting. Yeah. And then we have, like, this very cute little slice of life moment at the end here where it's like, the girls are all going to live together, and so as a way to kind of celebrate their little found family, they're like, oh, let's all buy mugs to... The shop that they go to has, like, it's just like a library of mugs. It's very ridiculous, but it's a fun visual, though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so they each get a very unique mug to themselves. They all choose their favorites for different reasons, and now they all have, like, the mug that is theirs, and it's a part of them living together with Yachio. And
because they're all
cute.
Like a little family.
Yeah. It is in this like kind of final scene, like, you know, they're all eating together, drinking together, when Sana talks to them about kind of her own experiences and what's going on with Iroha, trying to, you know, catch her up with stuff. And it turns out that one of the girls that Iroha knows from, you know, Ui and the hospital is whose name is Nemu, actually is a member of Magius, so they're like, huh, what, okay, they don't know what this means yet, but they have to kind of use that to keep investigating.
Yeah.
So they're trying to figure out what to do next. You know, are they going to look for another rumor? Are they going to try to find the Wings of Magius? If they do, which member are they going to go after, etc.? There's a lot of questions by episode 11, and it ends up being Iroha who finds one of the sisters, Tsukio, who's at her own school. And they have a private conversation, and she doesn't tell anyone else about meeting her, just says, like, you know, I would like to see Nemu and talk to her. And, like, I'm not going to tell anyone that you're a magical girl or whatever.
Yeah, or where you go to school or whatever.
Yeah, because obviously that would be, like, you know, a big threat, etc. But she says, I'm not sure, I have to talk to Mifu about this, and I'll get back to you. Seems to be left at that. So then we get a kind of continuation of the mug cup situation, where while Yachio's out working, the other girls decide to go buy coasters for their mugs. So, you know, kind of continuing to make their home a home. It's very cute. There ends up being a witch in the meantime, so they take care of that. And then, I guess later that night, when they expect Yachio to come home, Mifu shows up, and she's very, very familiar about the house. She decides to go ahead and make tea for them on her own, and, like, knows where her own cup is and stuff. And it's, like, very, very familiar with the place.
It's like, Mifuyu has a mug already. Curious, yes.
Interesting, yes. And so she asks Iroha to join the Wings of Magius, and saying that, like, if you're interested, you can go to this place called the Memory Museum the next day, tomorrow. And if not, that's fine, but that's, like, it's kind of the next step. And kind of, like, says, basically, like, you know, if you want to meet this girl, Nemu, you gotta, like, join us, right? So it's, like, very, very secretive, etc. But they do go to this museum, and it's, like, very... I mean, everything in this show is a little weird and trippy and stuff, but it is, yeah, especially so...
Yeah, this is like, this feels like a dream space.
A place that kind of connects to the memories of magical girls, it seems. And we also get a little scene of Momoko, who we haven't really seen that much in a while, talking to Rena about what happened to Yachio. And, you know, at first she's like, why are you telling me? I'm not involved with her. She's just another magical girl. And she's like, I'm telling you because this affects all magical girls. Yeah.
And if you've seen the original Madoka Magica, you can probably guess where this is going.
Indeed, indeed. So it's interesting, kind of like, I tried to imagine what watching this show would be like for someone who hasn't watched Madoka Magica.
Yeah,
like,
and there are people who have played the game and watched this anime without seeing it.
That's so fascinating. But they do explain a lot of the stuff that we learn as like Madoka fans in the original show. We end up meeting Toka, who was actually another one of the girls from Iroha's Dreams. She doesn't remember Ui. She's like very adamant, like, there's no way, like, you're calling me a liar if you're saying that, like, I don't know, like, I'm supposed to know who this girl is.
Yeah, because, like, both Toka and Nemu are, like, freakishly smart for their age.
Mm-hmm.
They talk like little scientists. So Toka is, like, so used to being right about everything that she doesn't even consider the possibility that she wouldn't remember something like that.
Right, yes. So she ends up explaining to the girls about the rules, about how the soul gem of the magical girl literally contains their soul, and how, you know, if it breaks, then you die, and how, like, if the soul gem goes dark, then you become a witch, and all of that. And, of course, for these magical girls, it's the first time kind of being relayed this information and all of that. But we also see that, again, with Momoko talking to Kaede and Rena, like telling Rena about everything with Yachio, we get some flashbacks to see Yachio and Momoko. I should specify the flashbacks are Mifuyu showing them to Iroha, which is a little confusing, but they're also being explained to Rena at the same time.
Yeah, there's a little bit of parallel storytelling happening that makes it a little confusing.
Yes. But yes, so we see her fighting with Momoko and Mifuyu and Kanae. I think also another, yeah, Mel is another.
Yeah, Mel shows up later, I think. Yeah. But yeah, Kanae definitely is there.
Yes. We see these instances in which the girls had learned those rules, kind of similar to the way that it happens in Madoka Magica, right? Like, you know, usually you learn the rules when the rules show themselves to be true. So they see Kanae, who died after her soul gem was shattered in battle.
Yeah, they fought a witch together, and her soul gem shattered in the battle. And even though her body wasn't injured, she died anyway. So they were like, oh no.
Right. And so they figured out that rule. And then, Mel Medu, she ended up turning into a witch when her soul gem was tainted. And that was when they figured out that particular rule about magical girls becoming witches. And we see a very kind of familiar conversation with the Kyubei that they have. And it is interesting that at the end of this, you know, the kind of final scene that Iroha has shown is Mifuyu falling into the same despair of this knowledge. But rather than becoming a witch, she created a double at the same time. And so that is when Toka reveals that, like, oh, she created the double system, and this is to free magical girls from the magical girl system. So it's such a fascinating concept. And I definitely want to talk about, like, this idea of, like, this way of escaping the magical girl system in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if
it's interesting both in universe and out of universe, I feel like.
Yeah, can you tell me more about what your thoughts?
Yeah, no, thematically speaking, considering what witches represent in the original Madoka Magica, they're the embodiment both of grief and of sort of like a toxic maturity of sorts. And it's very interesting to present that as something that the magical girl can control. And I find that concept appealing, of a magical girl being able to actually grasp her own grief and control it in that way. And from a metaphorical standpoint, it feels like coping with one's, like, depression or emotions and whatnot, rather than letting it consume them.
Yeah. I find it so interesting as, like, a possible... Now, granted, the kind of way that things are going in the Madoka storyline is not this, but I think it's interesting as a kind of way to kind of give an alternate option, like a more positive option to the magical girl system, as again, like a way of escaping it.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to like how things were originally written, which are, you know, quite dark, and the kind of ultimate way that Madoka has to free everyone is, it's kind of nice, but it also like just ends with everyone dying when their soul gem is fully contaminated. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, it's like you said, like it's more of like controlling and like kind of taking back, reclaiming your
belief. Yeah, it's regaining agency. Yeah.
It is really fascinating as a concept. And I think it's, I would love to see it play out more, yeah. But it's like, yeah.
From an out-of-universe perspective, I like it just as, like, a nerd who, like, likes cool art.
Very fair, very fair. Yeah, because it's, like, basically, and, you know, this also relates to the game. In the game, you can, throughout the battle, you get to a point where you're able to unleash your doppel, right, when you're battling.
And yeah, it's very like, exciting. Normally in the game, you have, like, your Magia attack, which is like a limit break or something if you're thinking in Final Fantasy terms. But then if you raise the girl to a high enough point, you can unlock her doppel, which is like a second stronger Magia.
Yes. So it's really fun, it's really exciting to see as well. And yeah, because like the doppels still have the trippy visuals of the witches, it makes for a really interesting kind of display.
Yeah, yeah, but they're usually shown as, like, the original magical girl is still there piloting the witch, almost.
Yes, so it's really
which cool. Is kind of why I liken it to, like, the Evas in Evangelion.
Ah.
You have this big monster thing that a small child is piloting.
Yes, so it's really cool. I think it's an interesting system.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, like, not gonna lie, in terms of the way that this system is, like, kind of plays out, I like it a little bit more than the original series. Sorry to Madoka.
Yeah, no, I really like this concept, and that's why I have mixed feelings on, like, how it's presented in terms of, like, how the series wants us to view them.
Right, yes. Again, like, it's very clear, and, you know, we see as we kind of understand, oh, this is why this rumor about this city is abound, and, like, and all that. Like, we get to more details later on with that, like, spoilery stuff. But and with this, like, series in general, we're seeing, like, oh, they are being called to this place because to save the magical girl is to give them an out, basically. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to become a witch. You don't have to fall into the despair.
In theory, this is really good. This is a good aim that they're aiming for.
Mm.
In theory, is yes. The key word.
In theory. Yes. At least good for the individual, I should say.
Toka and Nemu are great at theory, not so great at application.
Yeah, so we get into episode 13, and Yachio picks up Iroha and tells her that their magical girl team is disbanding, which is interesting. Again, she's so reasonably emo about the fact that, like, she's sure that, like, anyone who stays with her is going to die because of, like, them wanting to survive, etc. But still, Iroha, like, insists.
Yeah, to be clear, like, Yachio's wish as a magical girl was to survive. And yes. Now she's convinced herself that because of her wish to survive, her wish has been twisted to kill those around her at the expense of saving her.
Yeah, which is an understandable, like, leap to make, but it's not necessarily true, because it's just like, oh no, that's just like, that's what being a magical girl is.
She's been given no reason to doubt this, considering what's happened to her up to this point.
Right, yes. But still, Iroha's like, no, we're gonna all stick together, obviously. They're still in the museum, they're trying to get out, and they get attacked by Mami, who is... I have really strong feelings about, like, how Mami is presented, like, all the time in the series.
Well, yeah, and in the original series, for
yeah, where, like, she just cannot handle the grief of the truth at all for some reason, and she just always falls into, like, such great despair, and she's like she's trying to stop them and, like, saying, like, you know, we need to bring Kaname here, right? Talking about Madoka, and it's like, what's going on? Like, what happened to her in this timeline?
Yeah, and you can kind of see as well that, like, based on the way her eyes are glowing, that she's also, like, a little bit brainwashed too.
Yeah. So it's really weird. Things are like, yeah, really off here. But the girls get rescued by Sayaka. So we still get yet another original character from the original Monomagi. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're attacking each other. And both Iroha and Yachio use their doppels and fight as well. The museum is collapsing around them, and Sayaka gets Yachio away from everything going around them, but...
Yeah, all they can really do at this point is escape and retreat.
Yeah, and it seems that Iroha might have fallen down into the depths of the collapsing museum, so it's pretty shocking and scary again, especially for Yachio, who's, like, insisting, like, everyone around him is dying. And yeah, we see at the kind of end here that other characters have also joined the Magius group.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we go to basically like a big, like a cult leader speech, basically. It's a cult leader speech
that Toka
is giving to a giant crowd of magical girls in black robes.
Yeah, so it's, again, it's interesting, the concept of like freedom, and then like you see its application in this group, and it's like, oh, we know this is bad.
Yeah, the implication is like, it doesn't matter what this good aim is, something evil is going on.
Yeah, but that's how season one ends, kind of a dark point, but we do know, like, there are hints as to what is coming next, so, like, by the time season one ended, we knew a season two was coming.
Yeah, and the most interesting things to see here in this crowd at the end is that Kaede has willingly joined up with the Magius, so has seemingly Felicia and Tsuruno. Kaede is kind of pressuring Momoko and Rena to stay as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, it's a little scary, it's exciting, but yeah, I guess, do you have any other thoughts about, like, the show itself, season one, like, how it, like, kind of displayed the story and everything?
I definitely really enjoy it, despite the fact that the series has problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's a problematic fave.
Yeah.
I think in terms of like the amount of story that they had to cover
mm-hmm.
and the amount of the game story that is covered in this first season, I think they did the best that they could in terms of pacing it
mm-hmm.
out. Like, they had to cram a lot in, and that necessarily means that it feels kind of rushed in a lot of places.
Yeah.
But I think that was unavoidable with having to translate this story into this amount of episodes.
Yeah, it's...
So I think considering that, they did pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's... Granted, it has been a while since I played the game, right? Because again, like, I kind of just casually ended up naturally stopping playing quite a few years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so by the time I did end up watching season one for the first time, I remember feeling, like, confused, just constantly confused as to what was happening because of the pacing. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, you know, obviously it's exciting if you've played the game and you know the characters already, but, like, if you don't...
Yeah, that definitely helps, to be fair. Yeah. Because I do wonder how it feels to watch this anime without having played the game. And for the people who haven't seen the original Madoka, to do that as well.
For sure. It's like, wait, because, like, there's so many characters. Just there's so, so many characters.
There's so many characters.
Yeah.
They need they need characters to fill that gacha up with.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just like, oh okay, we're getting them. Okay, that's cool. But yeah,
if you haven't seen the show and you've been listening to our summary and have been having trouble keeping track of the names, it doesn't necessarily get easier watching the show itself.
Yeah, and you know, some characters can look a little similar, and that's not helpful either.
Especially when two of them are actually twins.
Yes. Yeah, so it is just, it's a little hard to follow. But yeah, I guess, do you want to get into some of the other, like, problematic elements of Makireko in general?
Yeah, I guess before I get into more of the problems, I will say that I do want to emphasize that I think the strengths of this story do come across still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you still become attached to the main five girls, especially, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I think the art direction in particular is the biggest strength of this version of it.
Yes, yes, I agree. I think, like, you'll still have a good time even if you don't fully understand what's going on, I feel like.
Yeah, you'll still have something really cool to watch even if you don't fully understand it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you can always just watch again.
Yeah. Yeah. And style over substance is definitely a critique you can make of this, but the style is still really cool.
Definitely. For sure. For sure.
But anyway, yeah, there are also problematic elements, and we should talk about those.
Yes. So, with the actual game itself, like we said quite a few times now, there are so many magical girls, and you know, whenever they do an event, they would often introduce a new magical girl to the roster.
Yeah. It would either be, like, a new original magical girl exclusive to the game, or it would be, like, characters from other Madoka side media, like manga, that, like, Suzume Magica or Oriko Magica, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
Tarte Magica.
So, you know, it's obviously exciting for both longtime fans and, like, you know, new fans, like, oh, hey, either a new character or, like, an old fave or whatever. So it's really cool to see, and sometimes they even have, like, different art direction with some of the characters, so you get to see some original stuff.
Yeah, they always list, like, the illustrator of each magical girl with each card, mm-hmm. and you can see, like, oh, they brought in this artist to do this girl, and it's kind of interesting they don't even try to, like, match the art styles very much
yeah.
with the sprites.
Yeah, for some of them, absolutely so. so...
But it's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So that part is interesting and creative. And, you know, again, it is a gacha game. This is all made to get you to spend money yeah. to get the gems you need.
The problematic element here is that it's a gacha game.
Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing. I think also in terms of how some of the characters are designed or the kind of storylines around them, etc., that's where things get, you know, especially problematic. So
yeah, like, when we originally podcasted about the mobile game originally, one of the main things we did was, like, character design reviews, and it became a running gag that, like, so many of these girls have an exposed midriff for no reason,
mm-hmm.
even if it doesn't make sense at all with the rest of the design.
Yeah. I mean, even Iroha, technically, like, she's got, like, a kind of a... almost like a sheer, like she's wearing tights over her stomach, so...
Yeah, it's like pantyhose material.
Yeah, yeah. So, a lot of the characters are definitely less clothed than, you know, we are used to seeing in the original Madomagi, and even more so, like, there are some characters that are, like, even more, like, honestly sexualized and stuff in terms of design or how they're illustrated, and it can get uncomfortable, to say the least.
Yeah, especially when you know that, like, certain magical girls are a lot younger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's very disappointing because this is one of those series that, like, one of the things that, like, was definitely considered a plus for it at the time was the fact that, like, all the cast of Madomagi was generally not sexualized. Like, you could make a slight argument for Mami, kind of, because she has a larger chest than the other girls.
Yeah, and especially when the movies came out and, like, her boobs became more jiggly.
Yes, yes. But that's, like, the worst it got. Even then, it was like, well, you don't see anything. And it just felt like this was a series that, despite the target audience, was kind of, for the most part, avoiding that element of, like, appealing to the fan base with, like, fan service stuff. And then...
Yeah, that was limited mainly to the merchandising.
Yeah, so the game just gave us a lot more of that kind of, like, fan service element. The other problem with the mm-hmm. series is that because they do lots of magical girls, they don't only do Japanese ones. And so sometimes it's interesting. Like, I actually really enjoyed the Joan of Arc magical girl thing, you know?
Yeah, that was one of the ones that's from a spinoff manga, but... Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it was still interesting to see.
Yeah, that was interesting. And, like, there were some that were kind of like, okay, cool. But for the most part, and especially recently, it's been a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I give you some interesting trivia about the Joan of Arc event on the North American server, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Unrelated to anything else here, but I did want to say, for the North American server, the Joan of Arc magical girl, her name is Tarte in Tarte Magica. I can't quite remember the reason for that, but she goes by Tarte. in the English server, she had her name changed to Dark, D-A-R-C.
Oh, okay.
And nobody was quite sure why, especially since it was found, like, somebody found at least one screen somewhere in the game where they forgot to switch her name and it was still Tart.
Hmm.
So it seems like it was changed kind of last minute. And the best theory anyone came up with was it might have been a censorship thing, because Tart is like a slang term for a prostitute in the UK.
Ah, interesting. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, Dark makes sense because Joan of Arc, Jeanne d'Arc, right? But
yeah, it might also be because, like, Joan of Arc is a religious figure and they didn't want her named that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hmm. I guess that makes sense, but that's an interesting choice to make. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that's your trivia for that for the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, like, kind of the okay side of things, all things considered. I think...
Mm-hmm. Although, even then, there was another girl in that same event who was clothed in black, like, long dress from head to toe, but she has just a belly button window for no reason.
Yeah, it's so weird. Oh, goodness. And I think the worst of the, like, problematic magical girls recently is Ebony.
Oh, that's the one. That's the when I groaned earlier, that was exactly the one that I was thinking of.
So for anyone who hasn't played the game, Ebony is a character from Egypt, and she looks like they tried to turn Elizabeth Taylor into a magical girl. And it's like, oh no. And
no.
I think it's the fact that her name is Ebony that makes it, like, worse.
Yeah. She's just like...
Yeah.
Not only is she, like, a white girl, she's also dressed in, like, a string bikini.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's just a lot of that, just frustration with the game.
Yeah, plus the other worst one, which is particularly bad because I think she's, like, a main-ish character in the second arc, I think. I haven't gone into the second arc of the game, so I don't know. But she has, like, a clearly, like, indigenous Native American-inspired design.
Ah, yeah.
And is wearing, like a headdress, which... If you've listened to any, like, indigenous activists and whatnot, and indigenous cultural advisors, like, wearing a headdress if you're not an elder is really offensive.
Yeah, so it's just, like, they don't even try to make it even remotely culturally sensitive.
Yeah, like, this design, like, she has a headdress, she has, like, little war paint marks on her cheek, and she has, like, the fringe, it's, like, it's Halloween costume, Native American levels of design, and it's, like, yeah, gross.
Very much so. Yeah, so it's just disappointing, and it's, like, just this thing that happens pretty much every time a Japanese magical girl series tries to go international, I guess.
Yeah, and, like, the only brown-skinned magical girl that I know of in the game is, like, also got a ridiculous chest.
Hmm. Yeah, so it's just an unfortunate part of the game. So, of course, at this point, you know, the North American server is no longer functioning. So if you want to play the game, you do have to play it in Japanese anyway. But yeah, it's just not great. Really would hope for better, but
Yeah. Yeah, I said at the beginning of this that I re-downloaded the game recently, and I am playing on the Japanese server. So, like, this was my first time seeing these newer designs, and I was just, like, horrified.
Hmm. Yeah. So, there's that.
Which is a shame, because I do still really enjoy the rest of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And it just feels like this is something that the creators felt like they had to do to, like, keep people around, I guess. But, like, it's just really unfortunate because, again, like, the original series was incredibly popular without any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels like, I don't know. I mean, this is just a general, like, really a problem with shows and games in this demographic more than anything. It's not exclusive to the show or to magical girls for guys or anything like that. You know, it is just a general demographic problem where I do feel like there are people out there, there are, you know, men and young men out there who do not actually want to see this stuff in their media. So, like, I mean, at least I've experienced that going to, like, shops and stuff. I've seen people express distaste at these things. So I know that it's not something that, like, everyone is clamoring for and that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, it's a relatively, like, select part of that fandom demographic that they're appealing to.
Right. So, yeah, it's too bad. But yeah, I guess, is there anything else that you want to talk about with this this franchise in general?
I guess in terms of, like, the anime itself, the character design elements are really the most problematic element, and they have toned down some of that a bit, at least, so that's refreshing to see. Probably the most problematic thing you could say about it is that it's kind of inescapable to shake the feeling that this series didn't need to exist and was made more for money than anything else.
I can see what you mean there. I mean, they definitely did put in the work, I feel like.
They did. I still like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
But it's very clearly part of the Madoka Magica franchise, first and foremost. It is, its purpose is to keep the franchise going and sell more merchandise.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I fell hook, line, and sinker for it.
Yeah, I mean, they do keep it up. There's even before the series started, there was, like, I definitely was seeing a lot of merchandise for the main characters from the game, so it was interesting to see that turn around a little bit. And obviously they've gone back to focusing on the main girls from Madomagi in the past few years, and
yeah, and especially this, honestly, year. The stuff with the original Madomagi girls in Magia Record is the stuff that works the least for me about it. I think the series is at its best when it's focusing on its core main new characters. Whenever the original girls show up, it always feels like either, like, a token gesture at best, and, like, actively undermining their characters in the original at worst.
Yeah, for sure. Especially, again, just as for Mommy, it's like, I mean, I feel like they did the Mommy thing, especially in episode 13, in order to show us the, like, Christmas Holy Mommy, the card that there is in the game or whatever.
Yeah, like, I was excited to get that card just because it's a good card, but, like, what the character itself represents is not great.
Again, very frustrating for her to see. There's, like, the way that she is kind of generally characterized and the way that people see her character, and then, like, how she actually seems to be presented a lot of the time in the narrative itself. And there's definitely a disjointed nature there that is frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of, like, the way that the Doppels are presented, again, like, presenting them as the product of this evil cult, and there's something sinister about what should be a symbol of magical girls regaining agency is troubling.
Yes, for sure. There is something to be said about, like, one character, one magical girl being able to give this ability to people, like, and kind of putting themselves into a higher position for that reason.
It strikes me as in the vein of, like, modern Marvel villains, especially someone like Killmonger, who arguably has an extremely noble cause but is presented as evil just cause.
It's interesting, and yeah, there's a lot going on there, so it's, we could definitely talk about it for a while.
Yeah, the only thing that makes it more palatable, I think, for me is that ostensibly, like, the main characters want the same thing that the Wings of the Magius does. They're just hoping to find a less culty way to achieve it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of, like, conceptual stuff. And I think this is really good, something that goes for the whole franchise, that, like, there's a lot of stuff that's, like, fun and interesting. And, you know, obviously that's why it's been able to go on for so long, because there's so much to discuss about Madomagi as a whole. But then, like, when you get into the details of stuff and, like, mm-hmm. the kind of messaging that it brings across, it's sometimes, like, a little questionable.
Yeah, there has been lots of discourse about Madomagi yes. by itself and, like, what it means in relation to the magical girl genre, in relation to feminist reading, whether it's pro-feminist, anti-feminist. To be clear, it's neither of those things. You can read it either way, but there's so much discourse around Madomagi itself, and that can't help but leak over into Magia Record as well.
Yeah. But it's still interesting, and I still think it's, you know, worth watching, despite the kind of, like, fan service of having to put all these cameos in there or whatever. I do think that you could have had this entire series without any of the older girls, but whatever.
Yeah, it's telling that, like, the arc with the AI, with Aichan and Sana, in the original game, Madoka and Homura go into the Endless Solitude with Iroha to save mm-hmm. Sana. Madoka and Homura are part of that arc, and how that arc plays out, they were able to be removed so easily. Nothing changed. Yeah. They were always, like, just a token addition to that storyline.
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting to see what they kept and what they changed, for sure. Yeah. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about regarding the franchise as a whole?
I do want to say, I think what I like the most about it is that it's, like, despite the fact that it doesn't need to exist, I like that if it's going to exist, it does feel so much different from Madoka Magica. Like, mm-hmm. where the original Madoka was, like, this very tightly written character piece that has a lot to say about girls and how the world treats them and the nature of hope and despair, I think Magia Record, especially in the game, because it's such a decompressed story that takes its time to let you get to know the girls over a very long period of time, you really do get the sense that you're getting close to them and feeling their little found family build up over time, to the point where it feels like found family becomes the main theme of this part of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially that's, like, with, like, other queer fans that I've talked about the series with, considering found family is such an important concept in queer circles, I think that resonates a lot with the queer fans that have been drawn to the series.
Oh, definitely. I agree. Yeah. It's, and I mean, I know there's, like, just so many characters in this particular world, but, like,
yeah,
it's kind of fun to be able to, you know, go into a different part of the same universe. I mean, I think that, for example, like, Yuki Yuna has been able to do that pretty successfully as well. They established their world, and then they were able to just kind of have a lot of fun exploring all kinds of little corners of that world that they built.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that this is similarly pretty cool, but yeah, I think because they still have to focus on, you know, even just the fact that they have to call it the Madoka side story and everything.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's why I say it's at its best when it's focusing on the new characters, because, like, when the original Madomagi cast comes in, it's just fan service for the original. It's not about the story anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
The core of this story, I think, is the camaraderie among the five main, like, Mikazuki Villa girls, and also among, like, the Momoko Kaede Rena team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, that real sense of camaraderie among the girls, I think, is the thing that mainly sets it apart from the original Madoka Magica, where, like, they were a team, but also, like, there was so much tragedy going on that you never really got to appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, like, among the main team, and also among, like, the world in general, just because, like, there's so many magical girls in Kamihama, they can't help but have to work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You get more of that sense of, like, the friendship and girls supporting each other feeling that regular magical girl shows have.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's pretty cool for that reason. Again, I just wish, like, I am excited to, you know, finish up the other two seasons and all that, but, like, I do wish that we could have more stories like this, you know, more side stories, more stories in the universe that have nothing to do with Madoka.
Yeah.
I think it's fun.
And that's very, like, when I first started playing the mobile game, that's what struck me the most about it, was, like, how good the character writing was, even in just, like, any given random girl's side story.
Mm-hmm,
like, the amount of character depth that they were allowed to get.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, of course, again, the original characters do appear in Magireko, but it's just, like, you don't even, like, you get to enjoy them if they appear in the main story, or if you get their cards,
yeah.
I guess.
Or if they get, like, a new swimsuit outfit or something.
Yes. That too. Yeah, so it's, like, pretty, yeah, it's interesting to see. I just think, and this is honestly something I feel in general with any magical girl story, like, once you establish that world, like, you can really just have so much fun just exploring that world, like, there will be fans waiting, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a nerd. I like being able to puzzle out, like, the rules of the universe and, like, how this story does or doesn't fit in with the original and the canonicity of it all, and nerd debates about all that.
Yeah, so it's, like, pretty fun, pretty cool for that reason. Yeah.
I also really, really love, again, the art direction. The anime in particular was mainly spearheaded by Gekidan Inukuri, who is in charge of all the witch art in the original and in the mobile game. They definitely don't quite have as strong a grip on story direction as, say, the people who were in charge of the original Madoka Magica.
Mm-hmm.
But again, their visual direction is outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. There's all these little things in the show, too.
If you're like me and you like Utena, it's like catnip if you love stuff like Utena with the way that show's visual direction goes.
Yeah, actually, that was one thing that I thought about, I hadn't mentioned, is the kind of conversations we see of people talking about the rumors did remind me a lot of Utena and the Shadow Girls.
Mm-hmm. And there is another Utena connection there. I almost forgot. J.A. Caesar, who wrote the dual themes for Utena, actually did do some work on this anime.
Oh, huh.
Which is saying something, because I don't think he's worked on any other anime since Utena.
That's interesting. Wow.
Do you remember in episode one, the little Uwasa song that plays when Small Cube first shows up?
Mm-hmm.
J.A. Caesar wrote that song and also did art direction for the witch labyrinths in episodes 3 through 8, apparently.
Huh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And if people don't know who J.A. Caesar is, in addition to writing those dual songs for Utena, he is mainly based in the world of avant-garde Japanese theater, which is why that's notable. Like, he brings this literal theatricality to anything he works on.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely that. Awesome, yeah. Cool. So with that, we are down to the final question, which is, Aaron, what are you looking forward to watching next in the magical girl genre?
Oh, I know I want to catch up more with Soaring Sky Precure, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, I kind of want to read, I can't remember what it's called, but I know that there's a manga that you keep recommending that is like a magical girl business agency.
Yes, Magilumiere.
Magilumiere, yes. I really, the more I hear about that, the more I want to read it.
It is delightful. I'm not caught up, but I buy every volume when it comes out here in Japan, even though I am super behind, just because it's like, I need to support this work. And yeah, it's not just like very good, it's also very accessible because you can just read it for free online, translated officially. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. Does the Yohaname count? She does have magic.
I've been thinking about that this whole season, like, watching the show. I'm like, is this a magical girl series? Is this still an idol series?
Is it a magical idol series?
Yeah. I've been kind of, like, toying with that in my mind for a while and trying to parse out what it means. And I think we won't know until it ends. I would say she is definitely a magical girl in the game that's coming out for it, which is cool. I'm very excited for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I did like just start dipping my toes into watching that, but I haven't gotten very far yet, so I would like to finish that as well.
Mm. So far, it's good. It's really good. Awesome. Great. So yes, Erin, thank you so much for coming back onto Sparkle Side Chats to talk to me about the show.
Yes, it's a pleasure as always.
Yeah. So where can people find you and follow you online to talk about Magi Reko and other magical girls?
Well, I haven't been very active on it recently, but I do have a Twitter still, and I refuse to call it the other name. It's Erin Cerise, twitter.com/ErinCerise. I'm also now on Blue Sky, if you're on Blue Sky. Same name there, so it would be Erin Cerise, ErynCerise. I also have my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/ErinCerise. I have not posted anything there in a while, but you can go there and watch my series on some of the early Magical Girls series, Maho Profile, if you have not seen those yet. If you would like to learn about the likes of Sally the Witch and Himitsu no Akko-chan and Maho no Mako-chan, all of those like early 60s and 70s Magical Girls series, they're very interesting to learn about.
Yes, yes. And I still think people definitely still reference those videos as like, you know, pretty major, you know, sources of info. So it's pretty fun.
That was my hope when I made them, and I'm glad they're still being useful for that purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's especially for the older shows, it's hard to get the info out there, honestly.
Yeah, because I made them because, like, there wasn't a lot of information available about these shows, but they kept being referenced as, like, part of the chronology of magical girl history, and it's like, well, wouldn't it make sense to, like, actually know what these shows are and why they were important and what happens in them.
So I'm really glad you were able to make those videos, even if you had to stop the series. It's good to have that info out there.
It unfortunately just became like too much research, and I ended up having too much other stuff to work on in my life. Right now, I'm kind of in a holding period for in terms of creation, just because I burnt myself out pretty bad last year, and I'm just taking it easy for a while.
Yeah, it's totally valid. I'm hanging on by a thread sometimes, too, so. Yeah, obviously we shifted things around here for the same reason.
Yeah, I guess along those lines, you can also listen to my podcast, Super Idols RPG, which is also on hiatus at the moment, but does have 30-some-odd episodes that you can listen to if you like TTRPGs and magical people.
Yes, absolutely. I must listen. Not just because I guessed it on it.
Yeah. Awesome. I promise one day I will put out the other half of the episode that that you guessed it in.
I don't mind, obviously, you know, take your time. It's just that there's like that one big spoiler that I've had to hold on to all this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. But I am looking forward to listening to the rest of that little battle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someday it will come out.
Yes. Great. So, yeah, thank you again for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well. And to all who listening, all of you who are listening, yes, have a good day as well.
Whether this was your first or last time listening, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. We hope you check out the rest of our chats, over 2 years of magical content and counting. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, or tell 5 friends, or tell the whole world by talking about us online. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at AyuShinos. AyuShenows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Did you know we also take recommendations for future guests and topics? Just fill out the form in the show notes. You can even suggest yourself, if you're so bold. The very best free way to support the podcast is using your podcast platform to give a rating and review of our little show. This gives the big internet machines the message that they should share it with more people, and I think we all want that, don't we? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast to talk about magical girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. The Forever link is in the show notes as well as on the socials, so be sure to stop by. Show notes can be found on your podcast platform of choice or at our main landing page at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you have a few bucks, you can give a one-time donation at ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commit to a monthly membership, which grants you access to bonus episodes about magical girls and adjacent content such as movies, comics, and other series that magical girl fans tend to also love. All it takes is $5 a month, but if you want to rank up, that'll give you discounts on art commissions and monthly requests as well. Music credits, as always, are also in the show notes. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical, forever and always. See you next time.